Oh, we're good.
Yep.
Hello, good morning. My name is Mark Florida, and with me is Wally Mead.
Howdy.
Thanks for coming so early. What we're going to do is go over the Configuration Manager 2012 SP1 overview. And what our primary objectives are is really to just give, you know, what the title says, is an overview of the product. It's to walk through at a fairly, you know, medium, high level, all the new capabilities that are coming out in SP1. What we're also going to do, too, is try to touch on many of the new improvements that are also coming in the R2 release, which was announced yesterday at the keynote. Hopefully, the takeaway you'll see from this is how we've made substantial investments in how to better support the consumerization of IT, how you can better support a myriad of new device types that are coming into the environment, and also be able to see just a kind of set of other changes that were made to really help make it more efficient to run the product. So just to take a step back and look at what today's challenges look like, we've been focused on managing users now for several years. I think I've come to conventions like this and talked about managing users for a number of years. The problems continues to get more and more challenging. What we have is not just managing the users, but managing just a whole collection of different devices. With Windows themselves, we've seen the addition of new device types, Windows RT, different form factors such as tablets. You have your traditional iOS and Android devices. The basic point here is that users are interacting with a myriad of different devices, and they expect to be productive on different devices. And by productive, I mean they expect to be able to access a set of applications as well as corporate data from these devices as well. This puts a lot of burden on IT. How do you keep corporate assets protected? How do you ensure that these users can be productive, but at the same time making sure that your compliance and your support costs can stay in check? So what we're going to do is talk to you today at a fairly high level about how we've focused on managing users, managing their experience across all these different devices, providing access, empowering the end user, so that they can get access to these applications and the corporate data, but at the same time, making that experience simple enough for you. There's a focus on unification. We started this a few years ago. There's a few sort of poignant examples of that. For example, endpoint protection. We looked at unifying anti-malware security into configuration management to provide a single pane of glass. We continue to do that as well with mobile device management, which we'll spend a good amount of time talking about this week as well. And then the last piece is that there's a focus on making sure you're protecting things, whether it's protecting the host, protecting the app, protecting the corporate data. We need to make sure that as we sort of build this empowerment for the end user, that we're also providing the right level of protections for corporate assets. So to kind of bring this more down to the specific area that we're in with Configuration Manager, what we looked at was how do we empower these end users who are interacting with multiple different devices? How do we look at the traits of those devices, where they tend to be connected from anywhere? And then how do we also then look at the heavy investment in how end users are productive at work today, which is a traditional desktop, laptop type of scenario? And what we did is we looked at Configuration Manager and said, let's have a single point of glass, let's have a single common experience to manage users regardless of the device that they're interacting with. And let's not force the issue with our administrators in terms of having to deal with multiple different tool sets. So what we've enabled in Service Pack 1 is the ability for the IT administrator to go to a single console, and then behind the scenes, this console will be able to interact with two different infrastructures, both the Config Manager backend that you're most likely very familiar with, as well as the Intune backend service. And the advantage of that is The Config Manager backend continues to be used for those on-prem resources, those desktops, those laptops, you know, whether it be a Mac, a Windows device, they still continue to report back into the Config Manager infrastructure. But these more modern devices, the ones that tend to be connected from anywhere, the ones that need connectivity in many different situations, those connect to an architecture which is just much more right for those type of devices, which is a cloud-based infrastructure. But for the administrator, the advantage is single administrative experience, learn one tool set, use the same features that you're using today without having to relearn to support these different device types. So what I want to do is hop into the console and show you how this looks in terms of just getting started. So what I have here is just the, I guess for just full disclosure, this happens to be a R2 console, but for the sake of this demonstration, this is all functionality that is available in Service Pack 1. So to get started with a unified management scenario, what one needs to do is create an Intune subscription inside the console. I have pre-created this just simply for speed. It takes a few minutes to synchronize data between your on-premise server and the cloud. But what you can tell from just looking at the property sheets is the types of information that we ask for when you're setting up this subscription. The only thing that's missing from the property sheets is GUID. It's basically a license key that is used to identify which subscription you have on the Intune side. So regardless of doing that and entering in some credentials, what you can see here is the type of information that you can supply. So on this first page, the thing that is interesting is that you're basically declaring here which users you want to manage or allow to be managed or allow to get functionality through the Intune service. So what I've done here is I've just said I want all of my users to be able to get the benefits of the Intune service in terms of accessing their mobile devices. What I can also do is I can make a determination of how to support different device types. Like for example, here's what one would do if they wanted to enable management of Windows RT. There's a simple checkbox option, which is just like a master on-off switch to just allow management of an RT device and allow an end user to then enroll an RT device. But what you can see at the bottom there too is you're able to specify sideloading keys, which we'll talk about in much more detail later in this week in our application management session. But these sideloading keys are what you can use in order to take an APX file, Windows 8 application, and deploy that down to a client yourself and sideload that application onto a device. There's similar functionality for different device types as well, Android, iOS, as well as Windows Phone 8. We also allow a level of branding information so that when your end users go to the self-service portals that we have, that there's unique IT branding. That way you can provide a customized experience that's unique for your organization. And once this configuration of this Intune connector, if you will, is set up, that's really all you have to do. You set the thing up, and then it basically just syncs information, very similar to how a configuration manager site server would sync information between two different sites. Intune is just, in essence, like a site server in that it just, you know, continues to replicate information back and forth. And in terms of the results, you can see is just looking at the device list here. You know, I had a number of test clients I just had created, but you start to be able to sync in information for device types that you can't get or can't support through the Config Manager site server directly. You start to see Windows RT devices. You can start to see, if I scroll down here, you start to see iOS devices. You start to see, you know, just all the different platforms that are being supported through the Intune service start to come in through that connector. And again, in terms of setup, it's really as easy as that. And then from here on out, you just start to use the same features that you're used to using in Configuration Manager. If you want to deploy software, you just use the application management feature. There isn't like a special feature set that you have to use to manage these cloud-connected devices. Our goal was to integrate the management experience into all of our normal features so that you didn't have to really know that there is this Intune backend in terms of operating the service. You just use the same management model that you're used to using today. So we're going to spend a lot of time talking about how you can now manage across this unified infrastructure. But again, as we'll sort of walk through this, you'll hopefully hear us be fairly clear around it's not so much having to understand how the backend works. We've tried our best to try, to kind of hide that from just your day-to-day administration. And what we'll start to do now in this section is really walk through a set of different management capabilities. Some you'll be able to use directly with Config Manager. Others will have a requirement of Windows Intune. And as we kind of hit each of these topics, whether it's managing certain device types or whether it's managing features like application management, we'll try to be clear about which capabilities require both. So as I mentioned before, there's many different device types, many different form factors. With Windows, being Microsoft, our real sort of focus there is providing many different experiences that are tailored for the needs of the user, but with a consistent experience across all those devices. So the idea there is that you're able to get the same application, the same AppX type of experience with the modern applications on a normal desktop all the way down to the smallest of handheld tablet devices. We also know from just having to manage end users that the story doesn't end with Windows. We also need to provide rich management capabilities for iOS, Android devices, so that we can truly complete that promise of being able to manage end users from anywhere. Now, the real trick there is it's somewhat easy to just allow end users to do whatever they want. The harder part is making sure the IT policies continue to be enforced, the IT governance and compliance requirements are met, as well as keeping just normal support costs in check is by far the more difficult problem here. So as we sort of walk through these capabilities, we'll first start by talking about the Windows 8 platforms. So with Windows 8, there's really kind of two different sets of functionality. With Windows 8, Windows RT, Windows Phone, our initial focus was to provide capabilities in SP1 that were focused on end-user-driven activities. So if you think about a Windows RT device, what we did is we embraced a model of bringing that device to work, or it's more of a personal device, where the end user is in more of a self-service model, and the IT professional is in more of a model of defining the policies that are needed in order to get the software. That's why initially with Windows RT, for example, and Windows Phone 8, we focused on more of a pull distribution model. That's where the IT administrator makes applications available in a self-service experience, where the end user can then go shop for that application, download it, and install it. But to keep the governance controls in place, what we did is we implemented functionality around settings management, where the IT administrator can control certain settings. You can think of it very similar to DCM or group policy, where you can control certain aspects of those devices so that you feel confident that when they are installing the software that these devices meet your compliance requirements. That was sort of the first pass in SP1. It was a very just an engineering focus on, let's focus on these personal device scenarios. Now with R2, we realized that to complete the enterprise story, we couldn't just go after strictly a personal device scenario. So what we've done with those devices, such as Windows RT, is we've moved beyond just supporting these personal device scenarios, but instead looking more at a more of a traditional corporate purchase device scenario. So now in R2 we'll support the ability to push software to devices, uninstall software on Windows RT as well, so that we can complete more of a traditional management scenario around having a greater degree of control on Windows RT devices. Now, if we're talking about devices that are just your traditional x86, 64-based Intel chipset, Whether it's Windows 7, Windows 8, it's the same feature list that we've had for a while now in Config Manager. You're still able to do all those same actions, all those same capabilities that you're used to. You're able to push software, pull software, run inventory, operating system deployment. Just that litany of features continue to still be there on that platform. Really, the point I just want to summarize to make sure I'm clear on is that the capabilities around kind of the feature richness capabilities that we have in SP1, which are focused more on these sort of personal device scenarios, that's really more tailored towards your Windows RT and Windows Phone devices, these kind of newer platforms. But as we sort of move and progress, we know we need to close that gap down. And in R2, we're starting to close that gap down to provide more control functionality. So with operating system deployment, kind of the summary of this is that if you're familiar with operating system deployment and you're looking to deploy Windows 8, there's many of the same things are still there. What I'm going to do is just sort of walk through the set of scenarios for those that aren't necessarily familiar with operating system deployment, but the scenarios still play out. We have a set of scenarios which are really around new machines. If you're getting a new computer, you can either just do sort of a fresh install, or you can rely on a Pixie experience to just start a self-provisioning process from scratch. We have another set of scenarios which are focused on most likely a new machine, but what you're trying to do is move state, user information, from one device to the other. We have really two different forms of that. We have an ability to just completely wipe the device in place, or we have the ability to kind of wipe and transfer to another device. And then the last set of scenarios we have are really focused on network challenged or limited network connectivity type of scenarios. And we have two different flavors. We either have a media-based approach, which is completely offline. Send a DVD in the mail, run the DVD, and provision the machine. Or we have what's also what we call pre-stage media. And pre-stage media is intended to be one where you send them media, and maybe the media has the majority of the payload on it in terms of the amount of content. For example, it has the WIM, it has Office, it has a lot of the larger applications. But once the system gets up and running, it can connect back to Configuration Manager and finish the provisioning process with a set of smaller applications, so to speak. So the key takeaway here is same scenarios apply when you're deploying Windows 8. The most substantial change, and we have a session later this week where they go over this both with MDT as well as Configuration Manager, is that there is a new deployment kit that the Windows team has released with Windows 8. So rather than using the Wake tool set, you're using the ADK. And that's by far the most significant change that you'll recognize as you're sort of going through these scenarios in terms of deploying Windows 8. There is a brand new scenario which is somewhat tied to the operating system deployment scenario, which is called Windows to Go. Windows to Go is really a feature that was focused on a set of scenarios that you can see here. You can think of them as a temp worker scenario, or where you have contractors, or where you have a disaster recovery scenario. You can even use them in a self-service manner where you can have end users provision themselves a Windows to Go device. And what this looks like in practice is you have a good performing USB stick. What you're able to do is provision a fully functional operating system onto this USB stick, and you're able to take that USB stick, plug it into any old computer, and boot from that, and you have your own personal desktop wherever you go, and you're just carrying around a little USB stick. So it's kind of nice. Now, the reason I'm talking about this is Configuration Manager supports several different aspects of the Windows to Go lifecycle. What we allow you to do is create the Windows to Go images themselves. So just like a traditional desktop, you'd most likely want to have a standard image deployed to these devices. So we allow you to do that, create that. The creation experience is extremely similar to operating system deployment. You do the same thing, like create a task sequence with an image and you provision it. What we do then in terms of provisioning is we take that payload, that sort of task sequence payload, if you will, and we have creator utility that comes with Configuration Manager, which basically lays that image down on that USB device. So that once that image has been laid down, then you go through a mini setup process to complete the provisioning process as well. And then the last piece that we do is we just simply allow management of a Windows to Go device. So this is the ability to actually have a fully functional Config Manager agent running with inside a Windows to Go image. What we also do too is we have the understanding surfaced in the console of the certain device type it is. So very similar to what we had done in the past with virtual images, where we surface that this is a VDI guest. What we have is a flag that you can tell that it's a Windows to Go device. The reason that's interesting or important is that if you're doing scenarios like patch management, compliance, inventory, understanding that these are USB sticks versus full laptops is an interesting dimension to understand, especially if you're thinking about a patch scenario and you're wondering why certain devices haven't checked in for a while, haven't reported compliance for a while, because if you're using them simply as, let's say, a disaster recovery scenario, you might not boot them until once a month, once every couple months. So they may not be online as often as some other devices might be as well. The other functionality that came out with Windows 8 is it's truly just functionality that works. It's referred to as always on, always connected. The underlying premise there was that the Windows team wanted to provide better battery life. They wanted to be able to have devices like a Windows RT device be able to stay on for a good while, not have to have the battery charged. Wanted to have a fast experience in terms of booting those systems up or switching between users. So what they did is they, in essence, re-architected how Windows itself works. And what we did in terms of Configuration Manager is we just wanted to make sure at a very basic level that we were good citizens with the architecture changes that they made. The way you can think about that at a little bit of a silly level, but it helps to drive home a visualization of this, is that we didn't want our agent to just be scanning for patches all the time or doing CPU or disk intensive exercises all the time, because that ends up just impacting the battery life. Instead, what we wanted to do is, in terms of being a good citizen, is we wanted to leverage the new capabilities in Windows 8, like the Windows Maintenance Hour. We wanted to look at the new states that Windows 8 surfaces, such as, are you on network, are you on battery? And then we make smarter decisions about when we run our tasks, all with the goal of trying to minimize the impact on the end user experience. Because we do not want the Config Manager agent being the one that's causing the battery to get drained or causing a end-user experience that isn't satisfactory. Now, with that said, just for sort of clarification, there are certain tasks that we know are very important. For example, if you have a compliance requirement and you've gone past a certain enforcement deadline, we're still reasonably aggressive to make sure we complete those tasks, even if it might impact battery to a certain extent. What we've done, though, for those scenarios is we've just redesigned how we do a lot of those processes so that we're smarter about how we're, and more efficient in terms of how we're running those procedures. But it was a bit of a tightrope for us, is that we wanted to make sure that we were being sort of these good citizens for the end user, but we didn't want to deprioritize these calls so much that we couldn't complete those urgent compliance requirements that I know people trust our product to perform. So what I'm going to do now is hand it over to Wally, and he's going to talk about applications.
Very good. Thank you, Mark. And welcome. It's great to be here. Hopefully you guys are all having a great week here. One of the things Mark mentioned is that one of the goals of our session as the overview session is just give you a high-level overview of the product, but also to get your context set for all the other deep dive sessions the rest of the week on Windows Intune, on this unified device management scenario, on application deployment and OS deployment and so on. So that's what we're going to do, some high-level stuff for you and just touch on different scenarios in the product and so on. So one of the cool things that we added to ConfigMan 2012 was this new way of doing software distribution, the application model. And you guys all know the classic packages, a set of source files, a program, which is a command line to do something with those source files that you then advertise to a collection. And that's the way you guys have done software distribution for a long time, maybe ever since SMS 1.0 when I started working with the product. Well, in ConfigMan 2012, we wanted to change this technology to be smarter about how we do software distribution. So we've come up with this new technology called the application model. A lot of great advantages over the classic packages and programs, state-based. So if I say as an admin that this application is required and it meets Mark's computer's requirements, we're going to install that application on his system automatically. But let's say Mark goes ahead and doesn't want that application, he goes and uninstalls it. Well, I said it was required, so we're going to force it back onto his system, again, as long as we meet those requirements. Or Mark installed some application that I don't allow corporately on our network. I can then, through the application model, force a state-based uninstall of his application. Mark says, darn Wally, I want that app back. And he goes back and reinstalls it. I then, state-based again, uninstall it. So a lot of cool things we have in the application model. Detecting whether the app's already there before we try and install it. No sense installing if it's already there. Checking your requirement rules. Is this a corporate device? Is it a personal device? Do you have enough memory? Do you have enough disk space? Are you in the proper OU or in the proper security group? Are your dependent applications, the .NET 4.1s or Adobe Reader, are those type of things already pre-installed for you? If not, let me go ahead and install those for you. So a lot of cool things we've added in the application model. And if you're playing around with ConfigMan 2012 or you've deployed it in production, you're starting to move over to the application model. It's taking you a while because you get that familiarity with the classic software distribution. But just some of the highlights here, and we have a session, I think it's Friday morning. Yeah, Friday morning, Mark and Dilip are doing a session on application model in much deeper scenarios. But it shows you the type of applications you can deploy. Mark's mentioned these modern applications, the AppX files. We can deploy those. We can deploy your classic applications, being your MSIs, your Windows installers, your executables, integration with AppD scenarios. So you got a lot of different types of applications you can deploy out to a lot of different types of devices. And the cool thing is with the app model, you create a single application. It might have multiple different form factors, maybe a remote desktop version, maybe an AppV version, maybe a MSI version, maybe a store-linked version for a mobile device. You just deploy the application, and the client figures out what's the proper format for that computer. In your classic stuff, you have to look at all those programs you have for your package, and you have to advertise or deploy the one you think is best for Mark as an end user or his computer. Now that all that smarts is taken care of by us in the application model. So a lot of different ways of doing the deployment, a lot of different technologies. We have great hands-on labs. If you go over to across the hall to Hall 8, across the avenue here, got some self-paced labs in there on application deployment, three or four of them in there. So get your feet wet if you're not familiar with it. Down the lower right is the different platforms, traditional Windows platforms, the Windows RT, the Windows Phone 8, the iOS, and the Androids through the unified device management scenario that Mark mentioned before, and we've got a lot of presentations on the rest of the week. So I'm just going to kick over real quick and show you just a real quick little demo of the application model. There we go. So you go to the software library, you expand application management, and where most of you are living today is in the classic packages and programs. It works exactly the same way as you guys know from SMS 2003 or ConfigMan 2007. And we left that comfort level for you guys, so as you're migrating over, you can still do your software distribution the way you know how to do so. And then when you migrate from ConfigMan 2007 over to ConfigMan 2012, your packages and programs come over as packages and programs. You got that same comfort level, that same level of control. But now where we really want you guys living, because that state-based, those dependencies, detection methods, requirement rules, all those cool things that we have now, supersedence, is in the application model. So here we have a few different applications created for you. And it's very simple to go create an application. All I would do is do a right-click or go up to the menu, ribbon, create application. And then you just drop down on the type of, the type of application you want to look at. So Windows installer, Windows app package, those modern apps, those AppX files that Mark's talking about. We also have store links. So Windows Store, Windows Phone Store, Apple Store, Google Play. So the ability of having an application that's sitting in some store somewhere that you basically take the URL for that app and publish it to the user, so when Mark's in his self-service portal on his device, he doesn't have to go browsing through the store. He sees it in his self-service portal, which you gave to him. He finds the app, he clicks it, we take him directly to the store, logs in, and installs the app from there. So a lot of different cool different types of applications you have available to you. They'll mention later on tomorrow or Friday on that app presentation. That's the only new one we're adding into R2 is web application. And Mark and Dilip will talk about that on Friday. But all you do is go create a new application, just specifying the type you want. So here is a, if you click on your application and click on deployment types, will then show you the technology of that deployment type. Oops, wrong control. So this one is a Windows app package. This is a native Windows 8 application as a Windows app package. We also likely have in here, that's an MSI. Here's a Windows Store link. So Windows Store link means this is an application sitting in the Windows Store, and I want to publish it to Mark so that in his self-service portal, he can go and click it there, take him to the store, let him go and install it from the store. All you do is you browse to that store link. So if I were to take this application and go to properties, just show you real quickly what that looks like. Go to the content. And here you see the path that it's going to is a store path. So all I do is browse to a computer that already has an application installed from the store. We just pick up the URL. And that's what we then deploy to that end user in the self-service portal or in our application catalog if it's an on-premise type application, depending upon what you're looking at. So very, very simple, easy way to create your application. Just point to the source files. Then you go in there and add in those requirement rules, the detection methods, those dependencies. Target your application, your collection of users or devices, and bingo, our client figures out if it can install. If so, what deployment type can it install for that application? And then we manage it through that technology. So very, very simple, easy to do, and very, very powerful compared to what you're used to with the packages and programs. Again, Friday morning, they got that session to go much deeper into that. One of the other cool things that we do, that I've already referenced, is the integration with virtual technologies. Because not always do you want to have the application installed on a laptop or a desktop system. So you can put in requirement rules that states, when I advertise or deploy this software to Mark, if he's on his laptop, let him go ahead and install the MSI or the AppX file onto his local laptop. So he's always got that application available to him. But now he walks over to my laptop. I don't want him installing his software on my computer. But he still wants to use my computer to get his work done. So instead, we'll present to him a virtual version of that application, whether it's AppV or if you have one of our vendors, such as Citrix, they might have a Zenapp version of the application for a connector for it. Present that to him so he can still use that application, but just not install it locally. So we integrate with AppV 4.6 Service Pack 2, as well as AppV 5.0. And the cool technology there is if you're already running AppV 4.6 Service Pack 2, you can then install AppV 5 on that same computer and have both versions of the virtual technology co-locate on the client at the same time. So you can still deploy your old AppV 4.6 apps as well as the new AppV 5 apps. They're different format as far as the sequencing goes, so different technology there. So you're either deploying an old app or a new app in this virtual technology. One of the very cool things with AppV 5 comes into play is that we have this thing called connection groups. If I'm going to go switch back to slides here just a second. In the AppV 4.6 scenario, if I sequence two different applications uniquely and I deploy both those to Mark, he can run both of them at the same time. But those two applications can't share information back and forth. In the AppV 5 scenario with connection groups, you can create a connection group that basically says, let these two virtual bubbles that Mark's running at the same time on his laptop, let them share data. And actually have a lab over there in the self-paced lab room. You go through and implement this, and you can actually have a Word document load up, so using Microsoft Office as a virtual app, and have it load up a Visio diagram to launch off Microsoft Visio, which is a separate virtual application. And prior to the connection group, those two don't interact at all. With the connection group in place, then you can launch the Word doc. You can then edit that Visio diagram because it'll launch off Microsoft Visio as a separate virtual bubble and allow those two to go ahead and coexist. So it makes it a lot easier so you don't have to coordinate as much with your application developer and the guy who's sequencing your virtual applications now. He can sequence them however he wants to. You set up a connection group between them and manage them that way. So very, very cool technology, and a few other enhancements in AppV5 scenarios for you. meter connection support. So one of those things Mark was talking about with the ConfigMan client agent trying to be a better citizen to preserve battery life and network connectivity and so on, is the ability that we have to identify whether a connection that your laptop has to the internet, is it a Wi-Fi connection? Is it a Ethernet-based connection? Or is it a metered connection, a cell phone-type connection, 3G, 4G? And you have the ability in Configuration Manager to designate or dictate whether or not our client agent and software technology can utilize that metered connection or not. The goal here is to prevent what we call bill shock. It's when you're on Wi-Fi, you download whatever you want to. When you're on the LAN, you deploy whatever you want to because there's no cost to you. But now if Mark takes this and he goes to some metered connection scenario, a 3G, 4G, well, he's got X number of megabytes or gigabytes he can download on a monthly basis. Do you really want to try downloading that 40 gigabyte WIM file over a metered connection? You're going to overrun your allotted allowance very quickly, and at the end of the month, either Mark or your corporate environment is going to get a large bill for that extra 37 gigabytes that he downloaded. So you can dictate within Configuration Manager, can we use metered connections? If so, how can we use them? Or are we blocking them entirely? And you can control it on an application by application basis, as well as a user by user basis. Maybe we allow Mark to use them, but we don't allow Wally to use them, because Wally has a tendency to overrun things. So you control it on per users and devices, as well as on the application level. End user can opt in. That's again the matter of we letting the end user have that action. And then you can state whether or not you want to allow an application to download at the deadline over a metered connection. And the end user can pick to choose, yeah, I think I do want to do that anyway because it's important. Or no, I better not because I don't want to get in trouble for my boss scenario. One of the other scenarios we talked about, or Mark did, was data protection, allowing you to protect your corporate data for all this plethora of mobile devices that people have now. And so we're providing more and more capabilities in the settings management and compliance settings scenario. So one of the cool things we've added in Service Pack 1 is the ability of controlling these user data and settings management features, client-side caching, roaming user profiles, and folder redirection. And you're probably thinking to yourself, yes, I can already do that today in group policy. So what's the big deal with Config Manager doing it? Well, the advantage is that you can now take the management of these three different technologies away from your Active Directory, your group policy guy, and give it to Mark, who's doing all the rest of the compliance settings for my corporation, and have Configuration Manager, that single pane of glass, that one admin console, doing all this management for you, and allow us to go ahead and control that, implement those technologies. They get applied to the user logon time for those Windows 8 devices. So again, just one console you're using to manage both your applications you want to deploy, your patches you want to deploy, your settings for applications and so on, and security settings, as well as now your user data and settings management information. Windows embedded devices. So the world isn't just devices that you and I are used to, the laptops, the desktops, the servers, or handhelds. Every time you go into a store, you go to a library, you go to an airport kiosk or whatever, you're running into these devices called Windows Embedded. They're very small, personalized versions of the Windows operating system sitting on very small form factor devices. Now, maybe the physical box, like an ATM, is fairly large, but the actual hard drive, the computer technology underneath that, is very, very small and tiny. So they have to have a customized version of Windows, and that's called Windows Embedded. Very, very stripped down, only given the capabilities that are necessary for that application, that functionality, that OEM scenario, so that you can keep that hard drive environment small. But because they're locked down, they have a very small hard drive, and you need to control or preserve that hard drive so that Mark doesn't happen to log into an ATM and install some patches or install some software. But you don't want that to happen. So they have these things called write filters, buffers between the end user that might be there and the actual hard drive. So traditionally, if Mark were to go there and try and install some software, install to the write filter, next time you reboot, the write filter is blown away and it's lost. Well, what we've implemented in ConfigMan 2012 SP1 is write filter orchestration, the ability in all of our deployment technologies, OSD, endpoint protection, software updates, application delivery, and software settings management. The ability of saying, yes, preserve this or commit these changes on a Windows embedded device. So if it's something you want to deploy to the device, a new patch, we'll write it, suspend the write filter, write it to the hard drive, and then re-enable the write filter for your protection scenarios. So a lot of cool things we've done there to help automate the integration with Windows embedded devices. Mac OS X, Mark had it up on one of the slides. The world isn't just Microsoft technology. So there's a lot of Macintoshes out there. And we in Service Pack 1 have introduced a native configuration manager client agent for Mac clients. Mac OS X 10.6 and 10.7, and with Cumulative Update 1 that just released a little while ago, we now add 10.8 support. So we've got all the major flavors of Mac OS X there. What we get for you as far as management technology is a client agent that's running native, discovery, hardware inventory, which hardware inventory includes your installed list of applications on that device, the ability of pushing software to that device, and then the ability of setting, doing settings management on there, implementing preferences and shell scripts of that device to control the behavior of that device. You can do software updates through software distribution technology as well. So some of the core capabilities to help get your Macintosh environment centrally managed through the same console you're using to manage your Windows environments, those mobile devices that Mark talked about through the Windows Intune connector setup, and then now the Macintosh environments. And by the way, we also do support Linux and Unix environments as well. It's not in this presentation, really, because this one is more focused right now. This part's focused on the user-centric, and end users aren't traditionally using Linux and Unix servers, which is what we focus on. Okay, real quick, another little demo, and that's just to show you Macintosh software distribution. So again, it's very, very easy to go ahead and create an application, go to your list of application types, and then we have, different keyboard here, Mac OS X. So you go ahead and create an application of a Mac OS X file. So we're running on a Windows operating system. And if you know Macintosh, Macintosh obviously is a different operating system. And we don't understand their file formats, the DMP and the PKG and the MPG files. So we have a utility that the administrator would run on the Mac client that would take the Macintosh native package, basically zip it up into a Windows consumable format called a CM Mac file. You would browse to the CM Mac file here when it asks you for the file type. You browse to that file that was created out of our CM app util, publish that through Configuration Manager, put that on a distribution point, deploy that application out to that Macintosh client computer. When the policy comes down to the Mac client, we go ahead and say, yeah, it's time for me to deploy this application. We would take that CM Mac app utility from our distribution point, unbundle it back into the native Macintosh format, MPG or whatever it happens to be, and then it would install locally using the native Macintosh interfaces and APIs for installing applications. So very, very simple, easy thing to do. So all I would do here is, go up here, go to the bottom, and then pick Mac OS X, and then it's asking me for that CM Mac file. And I don't, if you have any CM Mac files here, great on this guy. Think so? Demo, your demo stuffs. Mac demo, there you go, Skype. So here you can see this is a application that's got, it's already been converted. So it's already, it's the Skype application. It was in the standard DMG format or whatever it was. We ran it through the utility, created the Windows format version of it, put it on our server as far as a share, and now I just open it up. And then this goes ahead and creates an application just like any other application you'd create for an MSI, for an AppV, for a Windows app package, and so on. So I just finish off the creation of this application. Then I would go ahead and deploy this application to my collection of Mac clients that meet the appropriate requirements, the specific version of the Mac OS X I want to deploy or don't already have software installed, whatever the scenario is. We do have the detection method in here to see if Skype's already installed or not. So same type of normal scenario. So now we have Skype, and if we go look at the deployment types, you see here it says it's a Mac technology, so Mac OS X deployment type. So it's a Mac application. The deployment process is exactly as the same as you're used to from the Windows environment. So nothing really changes there at all. So very, very easy. Just now gives you software distribution to Macintosh environments. Okay, you also want to be able to manage those mobile devices, as Mark was talking about earlier. So you've got a couple different ways of doing so. The first portion of this slide is the on-premise only solution. So if you don't want to integrate with Windows Intune, you can manage iOS and Android devices or any other device that would synchronize through Exchange. So you have an Exchange Active Sync scenario. You set up a server connector between Config Manager and your Exchange server that will let us go pull that list of devices that are synchronizing with Exchange. And then we can go ahead and do some settings management, security settings, password policies, email settings, and so on for both those platforms, as well as do a device wipe. Oops, I left my iOS device at the airport or got stolen in the conference room or whatever, and I don't have it anymore. Let me go ahead and reset it to factory default so that my corporate data is secure on there. So you can do that today with the on-premise solution that we have. Now, better management is what Mark was talking about, which is the Windows Intune environment. So once you integrate the on-premise solution, Configuration Manager, with the cloud-based solution being Windows Intune, you see you got a lot more capabilities here. Deeper settings management, more complete scenarios there. Device wipe through both Config Manager as well as Exchange Active Sync. And then software distribution to the device being pull-based. With R2, the ability of doing push-based deployments to your iOS devices and selective wipe. Don't do a factory reset. In other words, just remove the corporate data off that so I can take the device, hand it off to one of my kids because I don't want Config Manager and Intune to manage it anymore. So more complete capabilities that they'll talk about later on today in more presentations. Then lastly, resource access. New in the R2 feature set is now the ability of you from Configuration Manager now deploying certificate profiles, Wi-Fi profiles, and VPN profiles out to your clients. So you can manage all those type of profiles centrally from your Configuration Manager environment for the platforms listed down below, the mobile platforms as well as Windows 8.1. So this gives you, again, centralized management of these technologies, and users don't have to go figure out what Wi-Fi network to connect to. You push their profile down to them automatically. Or you've given them the VPN connection profile so that they can connect up to CorpNet when they need to. And we'll talk about that more, but I'll just show you a real, real quick demo here because we're getting short on time. Need to cut back over to Mark for more cool stuff. Go to Assets and Compliance, go down to your Compliance Settings area. And now you see a new node we have down here, new folder, Company Resource Access. And let me go ahead and move my mouse so it's out of the way and do that again for you. And now you see the certificate profiles, VPN profiles, and Wi-Fi profiles. Create them here in our console, configure them how you want for your environment, multiple of them as necessary, and then you're allowed to go ahead and deploy those. So I'll just show you just real quick in VPN. There's a test one here. And all you would do is go in here and specify your connection type you want, what your authentication method is. Oops, here it told you the in this case, it's Cisco AnyConnect. We work with all the major manufacturers of those, to not just Microsoft VPNs, to allow you to have your integrated solution that you need to. You deploy those just like you would a configuration baseline over to your clients, and away you go managing that technology for your clients as well. And then specify what platforms you want. And again, we'll cover that at the end of the day today in the UDM session. And now I kick it back over to Mark to unify our infrastructure.
Great. Thanks, Wally. So just as kind of a lot of this was functionality that we had put into 2012, and we've made a few improvements in SP1. What we wanted to do with this slide was just sort of recap for the audience, especially if you have more of a frame of 2007, the type of infrastructure changes that we've made over the last several releases. So we've obviously, with 2012, we made a radical change in instantiating a new site type, the central administration site. The whole point of that site is really about scale, supporting multiple primary sites. There used to be a reason we knew customers put it in play back with sort of the original 2012 release, which was around future-proofing, because we didn't have the ability with the original 2012 release to add a new primary site. That should no longer be something in somebody's head. The reason being is that in SP1, we now allow the ability to add a fresh or a new install of a central administration site to an existing running primary site. What that basically means is that you don't have to worry about future-proofing for some scenario a couple years down the road. You can add that central administration site whenever you need it, whenever you have that scale requirement that dictates it. Primary sites, you know, the primary sites are what you assign clients to, support up to 100,000 clients. You might want to have multiple primary sites to kind of lessen the impact of a fault that might exist. You might have certain sort of political internal issues that necessitates the creation of a new primary site. But things that, you know, you really don't need them for anymore is if you're looking at them as being an administrative demarcation. That's just not needed with the new role-based administration that's in place. Languages, setting up a different site for internet-facing, those are all things that are just not, you know, needed anymore. The other work that we did in R2 was we put a good amount of time kind of on the back end, so you won't see a whole bunch of new features, but we kind of beefed up and improved our untrusted forest scenario as well, so that you wouldn't have to put a primary site in a different forest and then site connect those two together. The whole premise here was that we wanted the primary site to be, again, just about, you know, scaling up to support 100,000 clients. We didn't want, or continue to don't want to have the primary site be an entity that's used to facilitate communication between two different network segments. Rather, we want you to just be able to deploy the unique roles that you need in those different scenarios. So secondary sites is another good example of things that it's most useful for is when you're looking to manage content on the way back up the infrastructure. What we have is now throttling on the actual distribution point itself. So if you're worried about managing content on the way down, not necessary to have a secondary site, rather just have a distribution point. And then with the distribution point, if you have very small, you know, LANs, subnets, or you have subnets with machines that are always on, a feature that you can look at is the ability to use branch caching, the ability to just leverage your peers on that LAN to help service content is a good way to even eliminate a distribution point as well. Now, for just in terms of our general premise of managing the infrastructure is that in 2012, we went to a model of using SQL replication. And what we wanted to have was enough capabilities in box so that you didn't have to necessarily be a SQL DBA, a very sophisticated SQL administrator to be able to manage that. So what we have is the ability to have some key controls in Service Pack 1 to determine when to replicate certain traffic, what traffic type to replicate. The whole premise there is that you don't have to kind of go in deep into SQL to try to trim and manage your actual traffic. We provide an experience in console, which is very similar to our traditional functionality that we've had with content, where you can sort of pick a window of time to replicate certain traffic types. The other thing that we did too, you can see that here in R2, is that we now support the ability to move clients between two different sites in the hierarchy. So an administrator can kind of go in and rationalize or do some cleanup exercises in terms of how clients may have been assigned. And then we also allow a better story in terms of how the SQL Server itself can be restored. Now this is a visualization of just how we have worked around the challenge of being able to expand your hierarchy, how you're able to sort of manage the kind of growth of the hierarchy. Just for sort of historical reference, one of the kind of common scenarios we knew customers would do in a 2007-based architecture is they would have a running primary site, they might have another running primary site, like let's say they bought a company or they're merging with a different organization, and they would simply tie the two entities together, or they would create a new primary site and they would kind of put them all in a hierarchy. And we know that those scenarios were important, but just the way that the SQL replication, the way the architecture worked, we just, you know, weren't able to provide that exact same model. So what we have done, though, is we took a look at those scenarios, and we looked at ways to provide an experience that delivers the same end goals that was available in 2007, but the means in which you achieve those goals is slightly different. So take this scenario, for example. You have a primary site, 800,000 clients, just to pick a number. And then you acquire a company. So now you have, let's say, 40,000 clients. In 2012, SP1, what you're able to do is stand up a brand new central administration site. And what I mean by brand new is you just have a normal server, you run the config manager server setup, you pick it to be a central administration site, and during that setup experience is where we ask you, do you wish to attach a primary site to this hierarchy? So that's what I mean by a fresh install. Can't take a running site, can't take anything like that, has to be part of just a normal fresh install. Once that happens, you've bound that 80,000 site to this new fresh central administration site, and that hierarchy is sort of working by itself. Now, if you want to be able to merge, in essence, that primary site, that 40,000 site, into a common hierarchy, you can't do that same action. You can't take that 40,000 site and add it directly to that new central administration site. What you are able to do, though, is use migration. So in 2012, what we had was the capability to migrate objects and clients between 2007 to 2012. Now what we have is the functionality to migrate between a 2012 site to a 2012 site. We think in the end it's actually better than just being able to simply blindly add a primary to a fully running central administration site. The reason being is that it allows you to clean up, it allows you to groom, it allows you to consolidate versus just kind of tying two different things together. So what you would do here in this scenario is you'd set up a migration job similar to what you might have set up if you've gone through the migration between 2007 to 12. You'd set up a migration job between the 40K site to a site in the new hierarchy, and you would just pick the objects you want to replicate over, pick the clients you want to move over, and in the end you end up with just a single infrastructure to manage that environment. One of the other features that we put in Service Pack 1 was a new form of a distribution point. The distribution point is just a logical one. It's one that exists in Azure. So what you do is you go into the console, there's a new node where you basically manage your cloud subscriptions. If you remember earlier, I showed you a demo of how you set up the Windows Intune subscription. In that same folder, there is your Azure subscriptions. That's where you put in your Azure account. Once that's done, you're able to then basically create a distribution point in Azure. What we've done conceptually in the console is we've made that distribution point in Azure feel very similar to a normal distribution point. You do all the same mechanisms. You distribute content to your Azure distribution point. You can add your Azure distribution point to a distribution point group. So in terms of the day-to-day running tasks, you don't really do anything different for an Azure distribution point that you wouldn't do with the normal distribution point. The main advantage, though, is that it's not on a piece of hardware you have to maintain. It's all running out of Azure. The other kind of functionality that we have, just to kind of call out, is that this distribution point is used for primarily a set of content like applications. What we have is we've modified our Config Manager client to be smart about certain content type that would be, frankly, silly to have you go to Azure. And the silly one would be software updates. There's no point in having the Config Manager client itself go to an Azure distribution point to get a Windows update. You might as well just go directly to WooMoo to get that content. So that has the advantage of you don't have to pay the storage cost in Windows Azure. You don't have to pay any of the network charges. The client itself just goes directly to the Microsoft cloud, if you will, Windows or Microsoft update to get that content. The distribution point in Azure also supports branch cache. So if you got a model where you have a number of different clients and they're all relatively online, the good advantage of that is you get one client to request the content. It locally caches it so that other machines on the same subnet can get access to that content without having to pull it across the network. The other things that we did too is it's fully encrypted. The monitoring experience is in line with what we've done with other distribution points, and that's just really stated there to kind of hammer home the point that when we created this distribution point, while it's technically different than our normal distribution points, we wanted that day-to-day operation to be very similar. So some other things that we made in terms of content management, again, it kind of applies to just distribution points as sort of a more general concept, whether it's Azure or on-prem, is I think we continue to learn more about in-console monitoring for content. If I kind of go back in history, 2007, in my opinion, was very tough to manage content. It required a lot of remote connect, look at logs, to kind of troubleshoot a distribution. In 2012, we built a lot of in-console functionality to make it easy, or easier, to be able to determine how content is working. As we've gotten a lot of customer feedback, we've gone through a myriad of bugs and DCRs. That's kind of what that top line item is saying, is that we've just continued to just iterate, make better the content monitoring solution so that we can continue to move towards our goal of just being able to understand the health and monitor your content distribution system all directly in a centralized console rather than having to reach out and troll through a number of different logs. Our goal is to just make content distribution something that just frankly works and you don't have to worry about it working. The other thing that we did too was, as we got more sort of burn time, people using the product, supersedence. We realized that app supersedence caused a lot of, frankly, scale issues. You can run into some fairly exotic and complex supersedence scenarios where a particular app vendor might be revving their apps very often, and that can cause a lot of excessive load on your content distribution system. So that's where we put some smarter logic in there so that we're doing some delta downloading between different superseded versions of your applications. And then the other thing we did at the very end was we provided some new reports so that you're better understanding the actual, how your distribution points are actually being used to help with planning around whether to keep a distribution point, add more capacity, and so on. Wake Up Proxy. So Wake Up Proxy is, very similar in conceptual terms to just Wake on LAN. The big thing, though, is it's just frankly more reliable. The reason it's more reliable is you're not dependent on a remote server sending a magic packet to a LAN, hoping that device is still in the ARP cache of the router to be woken up. Rather, you're leveraging an actual proxy on the subnet itself to act on behalf of different hosts on that LAN. What I have is kind of a fun little diagram here to try to better explain that. So what happens is the machine, the client machine here has a certain MAC address. It's listening on certain ports. And what it does is it sends that information out on the network. The actual router is picking that information up. It's sending that information up to the router. But once that client machine goes offline, in a traditional scenario, the router really won't know how to get a hold of it. It'll broadcast out on that LAN for that MAC, but since the machine's off, has no idea how to work. What happens in sort of a wake-up proxy model is that you have this proxy, this host on the left there, acting on behalf of that client machine that's not working. So what it does is it picks up that request that comes in remotely, and it says, I will act on behalf of this machine. And it picks that request up. It then sends a response to that client machine, very similar to what a traditional Wake on LAN machine would do. And it then forces the issue to get, to get that device set up. So that's kind of what this looks like in practice here, is that thing jumped across the screen pretty quick, was TCP request ends up hitting that manager. The manager then sends a Wake on LAN packet, basically pokes the client machine, very similar to how Wake on LAN works today, sends a magic packet, the machine wakes up, and off you go. So what we have is you don't have to do any of this yourself. We have this algorithm that basically determines who's a manager, who's a backup manager, who can, what are the capabilities of the device that can kind of service that. If the manager goes down, how's the election process work? We do all of that as just sort of a native thing that the client does if you turn it on. So that once the clients are up and working, this behavior just works and you don't have to worry about it too much. Let me kind of process through this a little quicker due to time. Now, with kind of that, very sort of broad statement, you don't have to worry about it. There are a few considerations I just want to make sure are kind of clearly noted, is that there's certain networking gear that will look at this behavior as a little suspect. The reason that the gear looks at it this way is that it's seeing two different hosts respond to the same MAC address. So what it might think is that it might be a spoofing issue, you know, a different client trying to behave like a different, or behave like a, I'm sorry, a, one client trying to behave like another client. So that's typically referred to as MAC flap, where you see a MAC address appear on different ports. Depending on how network gear can be set up, you know, the network administrators may think something suspicious is going on, and then as a result, the network gear might turn that port off, or it might generate an event or do something like that. So the basic premise here is that before turning this functionality on, we advise you to talk to your network administrator, kind of walk them through the sort of conceptual diagram of how this works. Because if you're using things like 802.1x, which is, you know, the NAP equivalent at the network layer, that will definitely, you know, cause some issues, because that's a security protocol that's really looking for these types of potential attacks. So as sort of benign as this functionality is, if your network administrator doesn't know about it, you might find some functional issues that can be caused by this. So really all we're saying here is just this functionality, you know, should ideally work without really any major setup, but just make sure you sit down with your network administrators so that you don't, you know, step into some issue once it actually gets up and working. Endpoint protection, just to kind of reinforce the point around unification, is that similar to what we did in 2012, we ended up, you know, we continue to have endpoint protection as a feature in the product. With SP1, though, we improved our content distribution, our software updates, our software updates feature, to build some optimizations in to better support the deployment of definition updates. So what the infrastructure is now able to support is being able to distribute definition updates 3 times a day at full scale. So if you got a site with, you know, 100,000 plus machines on a primary, we're now able to just service that publishing velocity that we currently have with definition updates. The other thing that we implemented too is real-time actions, which I'll demo here in a second. And then what we also have is client-side merge a policy. Client-side merge a policy is a very cool feature in terms of being able to simplify your policies that you want to manage. So without this functionality, what you might have had to do is create a unique policy for your different target groups, but you'd end up duplicating the same policy over and over again. Like, for example, let's say you had a base anti-malware policy where you wanted to exclude file path A. Before SP1, you used to have that same exclusion in all of your policies. Now what you're able to do is create a much smaller policy, let's say for finance, or for office, or for some application, which has just the delta change that you want to have, and the client itself merges the two things together, so that you can better maintain, let's say, a single base policy, which has, I don't know, like scan schedule and a number of other very common things in it, or maybe has a base set of exclusions in it. And then what you're able to do is manage a separate set of exception policies, which can be much smaller, and you're able to feed both of those down to the client, and the client will automatically merge and reconcile those differences for you. And we use a prioritization tiebreaker methodology to resolve any conflicts that we can't resolve just, you know, naturally through logic. So real-time actions, what those are is what the name implies. It's the administrator doing something in the console and the client performing that task in close to real time. Close to real time depends on a couple different things, depends on how distributed your architecture is, but it's within 5 minutes, depending on how deep and how big your infrastructure is. Hopefully my demo works and I'm not jinxing it, but it usually, once it kicks off, it takes about 10 to 20 seconds for the action to run in a fairly simple setup like I have here. The analogy I used to describe this is it's like a phone. What happens is the administrator is looking to make a call, but before making the call, the client is maintaining dial tone, if you will, with the server. So it's just sitting there having a very lightweight TCP connection that kind of comes on and comes off at a fairly reasonable pace. And all it's doing is just checking with the server or the PBX for whether a call is coming in. The administrator then initiates that call, some action that's wired up to this real-time infrastructure, like the ability to run a full scan. And then from that, a task is created on the server itself to, you know, basically place the call. The client itself says, great, call came in. I'm going to pick up the call and I'm going to run that task. So what I'll do is do kind of a quick demo here of how that looks. So in the kind of in this demo, let me cut over to the client. Kind of the whole goal here is to kick off a real-time scan. So what you can see here on the client is the last time the scan run was right before this session started. So at kind of the conclusion, we'll hopefully kick off a scan on this client. So what I'm going to do is scroll up, find the device, right-click here, go down to endpoint protection, and then kick off a full scan. It basically had a warning there to warn me that a scan might be intrusive to the end user, causes a CPU spike. So as that's kind of kicked off to the machine, the other thing I want to show real quick is that we have real-time actions wired up, not just for endpoint protection, but what is super, super cool is the ability to do a real-time action for machine policy. So just like how you'd go to Control Panel and you'd run the Config Manager applet and you'd say request, you know, machine policy, what you can do now is you can do that from the console itself. So if you ever wanted to, you know, make sure a deployment runs or make sure something happens, you're able to actually invoke a machine policy request directly from the console, and within seconds, any of your clients that are currently online will all of a sudden start to request and pull new policy. So that's super cool. You don't have to use a kind of an add-on solution or remote out to those machines to make that happen. All right, so hopefully this has given enough time to work, and if not, apologies. Oh, it ran too fast, so sorry, I was talking too long. But the only real proof point I have there, and I don't think I have Zoomit installed on this device, is at the very bottom you can see the timestamp change to 9:39. So that's the quick scan just went a little too quick on the actual client itself. But you can kind of see the pace of those actions. It works really quick, but I have a fairly simple environment, just a primary site with a client. But if you have a distributed one, you got to wait for SQL rep to kick in. That's why it can take a couple more minutes. All right, so I'm going to hand it over to Wally, who will kind of finish this off in the last few minutes. Thanks.
That was such a great demo. Even the next room was clapping for Mark, so that's very cool. So yeah, between Mark and I, we left myself 4 minutes to do the last end user improvement section. So some of the cool things we've done on the end user side of things: Software Center, which is for applications or software you're targeting to the computer. You now can multi-select. In the RTM product, you had to pick an app or pick some software, click install. Pick the next software, click install. Now you can multi-select app software and click install for everything except for OSD task sequences. Does it make sense to multi-select multiple OSD images you want to install for the same computer? No more ActiveX controls for the application catalog. It's now using Silverlight 5 as opposed to the AppX stuff, which I know it caused problems with people with whitelisting, blacklisting applications. New self-service portals. So coming in the R2 release is, Mark mentioned the self-service portals for the mobile devices we're managing. And now we're going to have native portals for iOS and Android devices. So a native iOS application, a native Android application that will look like this. You can go in there, you see the branding up there, it says Contoso Corporation at the top. You'll be able to go in there and find those applications that have been targeted to those users and let them pick and choose the apps. They pick one of the tiles, click install, and then it'll go ahead and install the application from them. You can also designate applications as featured apps, so it'll move to the front of the self-service portal. And as Mark mentioned, the ability of, remote wipe. So you can initiate wipes or remove of the device from being managed from the self-service portal as well. PowerShell, we're about 98% PowerShell enabled now. So the goal is that any action you can perform from the admin console, you'd be able to perform through PowerShell. And I haven't looked at the R2 preview release to see how many PowerShell commandlets we have. I know in Service Pack 1 with CU1, we had over 500 commandlets that were available for PowerShell. So if you're a PowerShell guy or gal, play around. You got tons of stuff you can do there. Quite a bit of documentation around them as well for you. Integration with not just Configuration Manager, but also with Task Scheduler, Rest of System Center, and Windows and WMI for your work. A couple of changes in operating system deployment coming in the R2 release that Aaron will talk about in tomorrow's presentation. We have BitLocker enhancements. That's in the SP1 release, so you can just Use Space BitLocker, very cool. So instead of having to BitLocker the entire hard drive at provisioning time, you set it up for pre-staging, which means you only BitLocker as data is written to the hard drive. So your provisioning time to get the hard drive prepared, the system handed off to your end user, is now minutes as opposed to hours. Mark talked about pre-staged media. All we've added in there is the ability of adding additional packages to your pre-staged media as opposed to the WIM file. Now in R2, we have support for Windows 8.1 and Windows Server 2012 R2. We now have the ability of importing older boot images, so WinPE 3.1 images, because of that problem we had with the not all hardware supports WinPE 4.0. Now you can import down-level boot images so that you can still deploy software operating system to your older hardware. Virtual hard drive, virtual machine support. You can create virtual machines out of Configuration Manager 2012 R2 now and provision them for testing. You can go ahead and integrate certain MDT task sequence actions, the gather, the validate, the run PowerShell script command lines from MDT now. Very, very cool thing that's coming in R2 that people have asked for ever since 2012 came out with the role-based administration Mark talked about is that we had a difference that in the admin console, Mark could only see certain things. So when he looked at a collection, he'd only see devices he had access to in collections. But if he ran a report and that report was scoped to all systems, he would see all computers, even though ones he shouldn't see in the console. Now we have role-based administration filtered down to the report results. So you should only see in the reports what you see in the console. So very, very cool technology there. And the ability for you to customize your own reports to use that role-based administration functionality as well. Alerts, we've had those in the product. Now the ability of all alerts have email subscriptions. You can launch those off through emails now. In the past, it was only for your endpoint protection alerts. And then new in R2 is selective wipe. So again, you'd have the ability of doing a wipe in the past, which is basically factory reset of the device. Now, for the platforms we have listed down at the bottom, we'll be able to remove corporate data from the device, but not do a factory reset. So remove the applications we deployed or prevent them from running, remove certificates, remove some corporate data, policies, and so on, but don't reset so you lose your contacts, so you lose your personalization of the device, and so on. So the scenario being I'm taking an older device, handing it off to one of my kids or a coworker, and I'm getting a newer device. And lastly, Linux and Unix. We also have the ability of managing Linux and Unix server environments, not desktops. We focus on server environments. Hardware inventory with the native client agent. That hardware inventory gets installed applications. Packages and programs for classic software distribution to target to that Linux Unix server device, including software updates to your packages. And then it looks just like any other device in the console and in reports. So you run a report, you'll see your Linux Unix operating systems in there. And then just listing some of the models, the distributions that we support. CU2 just came out last week, and that added a brand new set of distributions in there for software distribution as well. So look at the slide deck when you get it, as well as the CU2 documentation, and you get the supported list there. With that, we are out of time. So hopefully you enjoyed the session. You got your mouth watering about some of the new enhancements in Service Pack 1, as well as some of the new things coming in R2. And then we've got, I think, three other presentations today, one tomorrow, and three more presentations on Friday about Configuration Manager 2012, as well as Windows Intune integration. So if you have any questions, come up and ask us, but we'll get kicked off stage here momentarily, get ready for the next session. And you guys have a great rest of your week. Thanks, all.